This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, the lost history of 1914. A new book challenges what is commonly taught about the inevitable eruption of World War I. And one man's empty wallet experiment. The author of The End of Money crosses the globe to explore the diminishing role of cash in contemporary society. But first, the deep roots of the fierce political debate over contraception. Rick Santorum and the Catholic Church continue to publicly criticize the Obama administration's compromise on birth control coverage for employees of faith-based organizations. Meanwhile, a number of new polling data indicates that Americans, Catholics included, use and support access to birth control in overwhelming numbers. The recent Republican outrage over contraception coverage contrasts with just a month ago. That's when the issue was raised with Mitt Romney in a debate before the New Hampshire primary.
Contraception, it's working just fine. Just leave it alone.
George.
Ellen Chesler is senior fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. We read her article, The Long History of the War Against Contraception, that was posted on the blog New Deal 2.0, and invited her to bring us through some of that history. Ellen, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
A number of polls recently come up with pretty much the same data, overwhelming support of access to birth control, some showing that 98% of Catholic women have used contraception. With such support, why is the GOP holding firm on opposition to even religious organizations paying for it?
It's pretty simple. A minority, if it becomes the base of a political party, can have an outsized influence during a primary season. Maybe 20% of the support comes from that minority, but it's very profound in political decisions. The irony, of course, is that the minority of Catholics and fundamentalist Protestants who might support this position and are now Republicans used to be Democrats right through the 1960s as part of the legacy of the New Deal, so that it was only with reluctance that the Democratic Party under Kennedy and Johnson in the 60s embraced contraception. It was actually Republicans who wrote the major bills that provide federal funding for contraception. H.W. Bush, Herbert Walker, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush 41, was actually the author of the Title X legislation that provides federal subsidies to contraception for women at the poverty line. As U.N. ambassador in the 70s, he started UNFPA. Ronald Reagan was a supporter of family planning and even abortion rights as governor of California. But in 1980, the Republicans saw an opportunity to tear apart the New Deal coalition by appealing to Catholics who had some reservations about abortion that had been made legal in the 1970s by the Supreme Court, and also Southerners who opposed affirmative action and other progressive Democratic policies with respect to African Americans and other minorities like women.
Well, Ellen, let's go through some of this sort of takedown bit by bit. You look back, you know, you've just mentioned what went on in the 60s, 70s, and a little bit of the New Deal. I'd like to go back to the New Deal. When the Margaret Sanger's effort to have FDR include contraception in social safety net programs that first began, tell us a little bit about her mission and how it was met in Washington.
Well, remember, she was the movement's pioneer who went to jail for providing and opening the first birth control clinic to try to test laws that were a legacy of the Victorian era that defined contraception as obscenity and prohibited the use of the U.S. mails for its transport. She went to Washington during the Great Depression, anticipating that Roosevelt, whose wife Eleanor was her friend and neighbor in Dutchess County, New York, would address the problem and incorporate subsidies for contraception for poor women into the, as you said, social safety net the New Deal was constructing. What she failed to anticipate, however, was the force of the opposition this idea would continue to generate from the coalition of religious conservatives, including the Catholic Church and rural Protestants, who held Roosevelt Democrats captive then, much as they have today captured the GOP. It was Catholic priests and still not the slightly still scandalous a friend of the First Lady who wound up having tea at the White House with Roosevelt until, ironically, again, when he was safely ensconced for a third term, Eleanor very much wanted public health to embrace contraception, invited Margaret to the White House in December 8th, 1941, but as any of your listeners would know, that meant that was the day after Pearl Harbor, mm-hmm. and poor Mrs. Roosevelt couldn't attend the meeting. We did begin to embrace contraception for use in the American military during World War II, and that was a very important divide.
We're talking about the largely unknown history of birth control in America's political debate, and our guest is Ellen Chesler, historian and senior fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. Well, you mentioned earlier the Democrats were largely aligned against birth control for many years, up until the 80s, let's say. What are the roots of that kind of connection between the Catholic Church's influence on this issue on the Democratic Party?
I think the hardest thing in writing about the history of birth control and a biography of Margaret Sanger, which I've written, is to explain how an idea that most people take for granted, the practice of birth control is routine, 98% of American women, as you mentioned, at risk of pregnancy, use birth control today, including Catholic women and women of all faiths. The hardest thing to explain is how incredibly controversial this was in the early days of the 20th century, even more so than abortion. And largely it had to do with the fact that women really didn't have identities or rights of their own, independent of their identities and rights as mothers. We didn't even have the vote until 1920. There were no laws against battery of spouses. Contraception, the idea that women could control their own fertility, was really seen as controversial. Sanger went to every church, Protestant church, Jewish churches, every denomination, and encouraged them to change their thinking about this. Part of the concern was obviously the idea that somehow this would provide license for sexuality outside of marriage, but a lot of it had to do with simply changing attitudes toward women's role in marriage in the beginnings of the feminist revolution. She lobbied all the churches in the 1920s and 30s. They all changed their positions. But the Catholic Church simply dug in its heels and refused to change its ways through a series of encyclicals that came from Rome, one in 1930 and then a famous one in 1968. But even as the church hierarchy remained firm in its opposition to contraception, the practice became almost universal.
We haven't really covered an economic argument here. This week, Mother Jones published a piece on the cost of contraception along with a calculator that shows people can feed in and figure out how much money a woman could spend on the pill during her childbearing years. We haven't really talked much about the economic argument, which you have an analysis of. Tell us a little bit of what your thinking is on that.
Well, I want to say something very specific about the lead-in to your segment here. Listeners should be very clear that Catholic churches, all churches, are exempt from this provision. We're only talking here about religiously affiliated institutions. Uh-huh. That means hospitals owned by the Catholic Church or another church, or universities or schools. And again, we have an obligation in the United States. These are all institutions that receive tremendous benefits.
Right, and I think this has been pretty well covered in the news.
Right, but there is an exemption for churches. Nobody is stepping on religious liberty here. There are also 28 states at the state level, because remember, we regulate almost everything in the United States at the state as well as federal level, that already provide the exact obligations that the Obama administration is seeking to place as a matter of federal law. Now, and again, it's important to remember, because we're going to expand the demand that insurance cover contraception under the Affordable Care Act, and that's what this is really all about.
Yeah, could you cover that quickly, because we're about to run out of time?
Well, it's simply that the Affordable Care Act will now compel all insurance coverage to include contraception. That's a state-regulated matter now, so it's not a federal matter, I mean, without getting into all the weeds about that. So it's what we're really having here is a debate over the Affordable Care Act, over federal health insurance expansion. Now, the most important thing to say about the economics of contraception, though, is that while it's very costly and needs to be covered as part of preventive health care, has always been an important dimension of prevention of not only pregnancy and abortion, but...
Ellen, I have to ask you to wrap it up. I'm sorry.
Okay, but it's also, it's an equal rights and equal protection issue for women. 50% of our labor force in America today is female. We can't do our jobs unless we can plan and space our families. And that's what's really at stake here. The tremendous drain on American economy if women simply couldn't work at all levels of the economy as we now do, from the highest levels, professionals, business owners, five times.
Ellen, I'm going to have to leave it to the listeners to go and take a look at your article. We do have a link to the article that is at by Ellen Chesler, author of Women of Valor, Margaret Sanger, and the Birth Control Movement in America. You can find out more at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us for the lost history of 1914.